Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 160, featuring Vicky Chan from Digital Domain. Vicky is part of the integration team. She's one of the supervisors that goes on set and collects all the data that you need before you do visual effects. And that's a job that a lot of people don't really understand or know, and it is actually crucial. And if you're very, very good at it, as Vicky is, you are going to make everyone else's life significantly easier. So what do? They go up on set and they basically collect all the data. They basically go there and say, I need an HDR, I need to do surveys, I need to do textures, I need to collect reference, I need to do all the stuff. It's an enormous amount of work, and it's hard to negotiate with all the stuff going on. And it's, you know, honestly, it's a really hard job. I used to do it a little bit when I was in commercials, and it's hard, you know. You have to make a decision that's basically going to decide how hard or how easy the post-production is going to be. And if you don't do it right, then it's going to be really hard. And if you do it right, then post-production is going to be really easy. So I really appreciate what they do, and Vicky is excellent at her job, and it's really cool to hear her perspective about it. So those of you who want to know about post-production and all the on-set stuff that's done in visual effects, this is a good podcast for you. In other announcements, I don't really have much. I can just tell you that I just got back from Sofia. I was there at our headquarters, hanging out with everyone, talking to people, you know, sort of planning out some of the stuff we're doing for 2018, which if we do all the things that we said we're going to do is going to be an insane year for us. I'm just really, really excited about it, but also a little bit scared because it's an enormous amount of work that we have to do. Some of it I discussed, so I recorded a really good podcast with Vlado. Of course, Vlado, we all love him. But he had a really good chat with me about some of the things he's planning for V-Ray Next and why it's called V-Ray Next. And I also did another really good one with Boris, my good friend Boris, and talking about some of the really big plans going on with cloud and where that's going to be going. So it's going to be a very, very exciting year. So look forward to those podcasts coming up. One last reminder, as you guys know, we're on all kinds of platforms now. We're on Spotify, on everything. But we'd really, really love to hear your feedback. So remember, if you can go out there and leave us some reviews and give us some ratings on any platform that you use, we would love to hear it. I know most of you guys are listening to this in your car. I've heard that from a lot of you guys when you're going doing it. Just try to set yourself a reminder when you get into park and you're able to actually use your phone, go ahead and leave us a little review. If it takes a couple of minutes, I would appreciate it. That being said, thanks so much, guys, and hopefully you will enjoy this great podcast with Vicky Chan from Digital Domain.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the chaos group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
So here's the thing that what I remember at DD, whenever we were working with the onset people, it was very disjointed. Like, you guys were sort of, you started the process way earlier than anyone else.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Right. And so I would never really know who was like an onset person, because you'd almost start like tapering off as we would begin. You guys would be tapering off your duties. So we never really had a direct connection with you guys as much. But although you were unbelievably valuable because we used everything that you created, right?
It's still that way.
It's still that way.
But I mean, I try to get at least requests from artists, like, or supervisors.
Absolutely.
No, and no. Then, you know, and then like try to like at least incorporate what they want, so right, that when I go to set, I can, you know, try and get as much as possible.
Right. Absolutely. And I'm certainly not denying that, because I know for a fact that the on-set data I used to get at DD was unbelievable. It was really, really good. And you guys showed me everything you do and how fast it is, which we'll discuss. But what was surprising to me was
that I would own. Like every now and then I would like Jesse. Oh yeah, you were the guy on set. Uh-huh. I can ask you questions, but I never really knew which. So, which some of the projects that you had worked on that you and I worked on possibly together?
My first project at DD was Benjamin Button.
Oh, okay.
So and I didn't.
And you were on set for that?
I was on set, but not as DD. So I met Jesse on Benjamin Button, and okay. I was a data capture assistant.
Okay.
So that was the first movie, Fincher movie, you know, digital, and everything was recorded into the recording systems, mm-hmm. not onboard camera.
Right.
So that was like the video assist guy.
You were a data wrangler in a sense, on-set data wrangler.
Not really, because I was camera department, video playback kind of department.
Okay.
Nothing to do with VFX.
Right.
And then I met Jesse, and Jesse's like, hey, we need on-set people. Do you right. want to come and work at DD? I was like, sure.
So, okay. So let's go back to that. So how did you become someone that was on set before you went into visual effects? So you always studied
film? I went to film school.
You went to film school.
I went to SCAD. I went to film school. Right. And that's cool. I wanted to be a camera department.
Got it. But, why?
I like cameras. You know, I like that technical part. You know, I'm more like knowing, you know, the technical things, fixing cameras, you know, lenses and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So I really wanted to do that. And I'm very meticulous and OCD. Mm-hmm. And I know camera department, you know, at least second ACs have to be.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yes, that's what I want to do. But I'm here on a visa because mm-hmm. I'm not a citizen.
Okay.
And where are you from? I'm from El Salvador.
El Salvador. Okay. Yes.
And so I knew I needed to work at a company and they had to sponsor me.
Right.
So I couldn't freelance.
Right.
So then my
But if you're for the camera department, couldn't you get the guild or the
it's still not a union? Company that sponsors you.
Oh, right.
Because you're still working for the production company.
Interesting.
And that changes every movie.
I didn't realize that. I thought that they could be similar. You could work for a
Yeah, okay. It's still freelance.
Got
so
it.
Every paycheck has to come from the same company.
Right.
You know, so just to prove that you're working constantly.
Yeah, you get your sponsorship.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And so I was like, okay, well, I can't work freelance. So what will get me into the camera department or mm-hmm. at least close to it? And I started working at a camera house called The Camera House.
Okay.
And then I learned a lot of technical stuff and moved my way up from, you know, shipping and receiving all the way to like, you know, digital stuff.
Yeah.
And that's how I learned like all the system. And that's when, you know, the Viper and the S2 recording system was like up and coming.
Right.
And I learned all that. And
that was Fincher's thing.
That was Fincher's thing. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's how I pretty much got in onto set because the guy that was running that whole system needed like somebody to help him out because his assistant had moved on to something else.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, then I'm kind of like part of the equipment.
Right.
And I went with him, and that's how I met.
So your first film was Benjamin Button's.
Yes, yes.
I mean, a David Fincher film who's like obsessed with cameras, technology, and accuracy, and everything. And it was Benjamin Button.
Yes,
that's amazing. How did that happen?
It was pretty much being at the right place at the right time.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like he happened to rent equipment from the camera house that I was working at, and I just happened, you know, to be there knowing the equipment. And it was like,
you must
okay.
have learned a ton on that film.
Yes. It was like, I don't even know if I can reach that level now. Like I started on my high and I mean, it's David Fincher.
Right.
I don't know if I can do better.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's great. So what was your follow-up to that? Was it a letdown?
No, the next one was a Tron.
Oh, right. So, you and I were on Tron.
Okay.
Yeah, except that, see, the thing is, that's the thing that, right? So I was on Tron like later, and then I know you probably were in Vancouver, right? For shooting a lot of it in Vancouver?
Yeah, 6 months or 4 months. Yeah.
Right. So this is interesting. So Jesse came up to you, right?
Yes.
I've known Jesse for a while, and he said, hey, won't you come and work at DD? Is mm-hmm. that what basically had happened?
He's
pretty
much.
Great. Okay. And what people should realize is specifically what an on-set supervisor and visual effects is and how different it is from the job that the normal visual effects people do.
Yes, because I went to film school and I learned the camera film production side of it. I had zero idea on how to do any visual effects. I'm like, yeah, this is cool visual effects. Things explode, you know, Godzilla, whatever.
Yep.
But I don't know how to do this. And so I told them, I was like, I have zero knowledge on VFX. And he's like, that's okay. We need you to do, you know, camera work and, you know, on set and, you know, how to, you know, deal with on set crew. And, you know that the role's there. Mm-hmm. You can learn the VFX. And mm-hmm. I was like, cool. I'm up to learning. So after that, after Benjamin Button finished shooting, I was tracking.
You were tracking.
On Benjamin Button.
Okay. Well, what's interesting about a lot of visual or on-set people that go there, I've been on set a few times when I was working at commercials at Method, and I was basically had to be on set. And the thing that was, it's a really exciting job because it's super high energy and you got to be on it, yeah. on it crazy. And it's really fun, like to see it happen like live in front of you and get everything. But the stress that I always had as a visual effects
yeah.
person there is that they'll come around to you and they'll say, we need a solution for this. And you have to come up with an idea in the next 1 minute.
Yes.
That is going to have repercussions of months of work.
Yeah, exactly. And you're just pretty much trying to minimize the work, even though you know it's going to be work.
Right.
Because you're like, well, we can't really fix it. Because like we're already, the ball is already rolling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? So it's just like how to make it roll one way instead of the other.
It's like a hostage negotiation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and then trying to make, you know, the actor happy, the director happy, yeah. and then plus not screwing up all the people yep. back at, you know, at the facility.
Right.
Yeah.
So okay. So why don't you give people an idea, for example, of some of the responsibilities you would have. Did you work on Real Steel at all?
I did not. No.
Okay.
I didn't work in Real
okay.
Steel.
But well, anyway, all the data was Real Steel is just a really clear example for me of stuff of just like, just everything comes in.
Yeah, yeah.
The on-set stuff just came in perfectly, like all the reference of all the lights, everything was just, and just DD was really, really good at getting that. And so mm-hmm. what I would get if, as a visual effects artist, and I started on a shot, the shot was obviously shot on a plate, and I would bring in the on-set people and the camera tracking people would go basically, here's your camera, here's all the lights that were actually on set, they come in as lights and cars, here's all the background reference information. All of the stuff comes in. It's perfect. Yeah. All you do is drop in your CG and you render. And you get 90% there without doing anything because yeah. the data is so good.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's what a lot of people on the production side while we're filming don't get.
Right.
And I was like, I literally just need 30 seconds and 30 seconds will save me a week's worth of work, you know, like an
weeks
HDR,
and weeks. Right.
You know what I mean? Like things like
that.
So
tell people like what you actually do. Like if you have the 30 seconds or the 1 minute, because you guys do it fast, you have to.
Yes. Well, I mean, it's so, obviously every production varies, mm-hmm. But like we just try to get as many, HDR as possible, mm-hmm. Or if lighting changes, then as many variations as we can. Mm-hmm. The reference photos of where the camera was located, you know, where things are in space mm-hmm. In comparison to the camera, you yep. know, so that we know spatially where we're at. Mm-hmm. Survey, mm-hmm. So that we know everything
so
in scale.
So how do you survey? You surveyed a set before or
yes.
after? Okay.
Either or during,
okay.
whenever we have time. You know, because right. things change too. So like we usually either create like a let's say we're doing this room. Mm-hmm. This room will not change, right? But the tables, the chairs and everything definitely will.
Right.
So we usually maybe do a base survey of mm-hmm. the things that won't change. And then while they're shooting, just like ping the tables, ping the chair so that at least for that set, for that shot, we mm-hmm. know where the tables are.
Right.
And that's like ideal if we have time or, you know, like you kind of have to see what you have time for because there's never any moment we have time to do everything.
Right.
Of course, we try to get it, you know. And then there's one other person taking notes. Camera notes, you know, lenses, heights, all that stuff, so that we can get it as close as possible.
Right. So you were closely with the camera crew.
Yes.
Obviously,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because that's what you're matching.
Yeah.
So you got the camera, you know, and a lot of that metadata goes into the shot, so you'll know, you know, what the lens is.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
All that stuff,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Primes are awesome. Zooms
yep.
are horrible.
Yep. Trust me, I've tracked zoom shots and it's horrible.
Yeah. So, but so that's one thing, but. Like, for example, just I remember you and Jesse were one day were doing a demo out in a parking lot showing us the process of what you guys do to actually collect data.
Uh-huh.
I love that demo, by the way.
Yeah.
Because I've always known the data we get and I had an idea about it. And I know it's like, okay, you have survey this, you do this. And then you started showing a few tools that I didn't know.
Uh-huh.
But the thing that got me the most was how fast you guys get an HDR.
Yeah.
You guys got it down to like...
We can do it in like 25 seconds.
25 seconds.
Yeah. Around. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
It's amazing. And you do it...
I mean, hey, you got that first AD there shouting at you and you just get in and get out.
Right.
And usually we try to get it in between shots when, you know, they're all like trying to figure something else out.
Yep.
But the trick is trying to get it as fast as possible, but or as soon as possible, but then without everything else changing. So like if you get one and then the lights change, then that one that you got is kind of useless. So we got to take another one. So it's like minimizing the amount of work, but also like being as fast as possible.
Well, okay. So what I always learned, and maybe, you know, maybe you can tell me your tricks too, but what I always learned, the first thing I do when I go on set, if I'm doing a commercial, for example, it's a one-day shoot or something, become best friends with the AD.
Yes.
He is the person, or she is the person that is basically has has control of the clock.
Yes.
So anything that happens, you need to do, you have to pretty much buy time from the set to do that, right? And every second costs thousands of dollars,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. And so like I try to sneak in HDRs.
Right.
When people are like, oh, getting makeup done, getting hair done, you know, in between takes.
Yeah, but how do you do it when because sometimes the lighting department just turns off the lights.
You have to shout. You have to use your voice. Like,
really?
And gaffer, best friend as well. You know,
right.
It's like, tell them, hey, I got to get an HDR. Can you just please wait for 30 seconds until I'm done?
Right.
And usually they'll like watch me. And as soon as I give the okay, they'll shut the lights off.
Right.
So it's all communication, you know?
Right.
Yeah. But all the heads of the department are pretty much your best friends.
Yeah. But what it's really the when a good set works, and everyone's kind of working with the gaffer, from the actor to the director, they're all sort of communicating in some way. It's really quite magical in a lot of ways. I think it's really awesome, but it's also really stressful, right?
It is. And I think it's like the first week is usually the most stressful because you don't know anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to like gauge people and trying to see, oh, okay, what are you cool with? What are you not cool with? And then once you get your stride, like everybody knows, it's like, okay, you know, the AD will call out HDRs. Everybody get off the set. You do an HDR real quick that, you know, so you just have to communicate before shooting and then make sure that everybody follows, you know. But nowadays with like so many VFX movies and a lot of productions like have already worked with so many VFX movies.
Oh, so they're pretty much used to it.
They're used to it, yeah.
Right.
Exactly. And nowadays, VFX is what, 90% of the movie?
Right.
That they're like, oh, they realize we need to get this.
Yeah, get this, you don't have a movie.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, we need to shoot the, you know, gray balls. Oh, we need to do a plate, you know, so...
Yeah, that's interesting. What are some of the challenges that you've seen that are, you know, that have either gone away or appeared that have been different since you started?
I think it's the amount of stuff that we have to do. It's
now.
More stuff. Yeah, like before we could get away with one HDR, you know, or like just a little bit of here, but like now the VFX portion is so big that we need to get, you know, more reference photos, more textures, you know, stay late and capture as many photographs as we can of the set so that we can extend it, we can recreate it, you know.
Right.
Like sometimes it was just like, oh, it's just a little bit of blue here or whatever, and now it's just one character and everything is blue.
Right.
So I think it's just volume, you know, and then the speed in which everything happens.
Right.
You just have to be on your toe and...
And do you guys, because sometimes on set now they'll have previs on set, right?
Yeah.
And do you guys work with the previs guys or do you like say, like for example, they probably say, okay, I got to do a previs and or they want to do a post-viz right after a shot to see if it's going to work.
Yeah.
So they'll come to you and say, can you track this shot for me? And then they'll
Sometimes, you know, like because we're doing so much on set already, that doesn't happen a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But if the director wants to see, hey, how is this going to work with that shot that we... you know, did the plate shot we did 2 weeks ago.
Right.
Can you just track it real quick and see if the move will work or something like that? Then we can do it on the fly type of rough thing.
Right.
With previs is mostly like, oh, okay, we have the previs, we are trying to match it on set. So we got to know the lens, the, you know, height of the camera, all that stuff, and right. communicate it with the camera department so that they can do it.
Right. So it almost sounds like, oh, you shoot it this way.
Yeah, because exactly. that's the way the previs exactly. was done. Okay. Yeah.
Interesting.
And some, you know, it depends on the director. Some directors want exactly what was done in the previs, and some of them just like, okay, that's a guideline.
Right.
Let's just, you know, frame it to
Which
see.
Which one do you think works better? Or does it really just depend on their style?
I think it depends on the, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Because, I mean, some of the previs you can't get exactly.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's previs. It's like, you know.
Yeah. I always find that sometimes when you get too married to the previs, it just gets, it's yeah. restricting.
Yeah, exactly. Because then you're not letting it, you know, it's like, but this looks better. But then they're so married to the previs that mm-hmm. they're like, no, but this is how we prevised it, you know? So.
Right.
But I mean, it's their vision, so.
Right. No, I of course. I know. It's tough to think about that because previs is a really interesting art in itself, and I think that the fact that visual effects now, used to be way back in the day, you'd go on set and you didn't even do HDRs. You just yeah. basically did a bunch of, you know, reflective spheres and a hope for the best with yeah. a couple of tracking markers and go back. And then everything else is like, well, just figure it out, right? But you only had at that time like 300 shots. Now, like you said, there's 2,000 shots. Yeah. The planning of the visual effects happens months and months and months before the movie's even shot and goes, you know, a years after the movie's been shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
So your responsibility sort of used to lie at the beginning of the movie. Now it sort of lies about with the end of the first third of the movie.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, I mean, in terms of the process.
Yeah.
So that's kind of an interesting thing that what you guys do. You guys go in with a lot more information than you used
yeah,
to as well.
That's
right?
True. Yeah, yeah. And at least we know what the scope of work is gonna be. Mm-hmm. And so we can prepare for that.
But you guys are also as close to being an on-set crew as any other department, right?
Yes.
But you're not technically union or anything like that.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we do the same hours or more.
Or more, yeah. Because you're not union.
Exactly. And then, you know, all the data we capture that day, 2 hours after the shoot date, you know, we have to download, we have to, you know, organize, rename everything so that right. once we're back in the facility, everything's organized, everything's done, you know, yeah. cleaned up and ready to go for everybody else to use.
Yeah, it's a massive amount of stuff. Now, do you notice that, like, for example, it used to be that we'd wait for a shoot to be done before we even started. Nowadays, we're starting to get data as it's being shot and people are starting to work on shots sort of, I mean, as we're going.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
And is that something that you noticed that have changed or has it been like that for a while?
I feel like they start working at least on development stuff mm-hmm. Before, you know, like especially like, I don't know, on Beauty and the Beast, they started working on the Beast, you know, way before we start shooting.
Of course.
And then while we're shooting, they're, you know, they would call me or email me and it's like, hey, we need more shots of the Beast. Can you do a dev pack of the maquette or the costume so that we know, and we start, you know, doing the textiles right. and all that stuff. So, I mean, it's good because then at least while we're shooting, they can still get stuff.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because if they ask for it after we're shooting, I don't have access to it anymore. So it's good that they start working before.
Right.
So that if we need anything, it's still able to be done.
But it's got to be tough because you are disconnected, right? You're not necessarily there all the time. You're
yeah.
just either talking to people on the phone or doing stuff. It's hard. Do you feel disconnected from the visual effects industry and from the visual effects facility?
A little bit. I mean, in a way that unless they just write asking for things, like I don't even realize they exist at that point. You know,
really?
I'm so into the set work mm-hmm. and just trying to get as much as we can
sure.
I'm disconnected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. But because you're on set, you have to go leave town for months at a
yeah.
time.
Yeah. Yep.
Does that suck?
I love it.
You do?
I love it.
You have, okay.
Yeah.
So you have to be a person that's able to do that.
Yes. I mean, it's weird, but like it's two different personalities.
Okay.
I hate being on the box. Personally, every time I'm in the facility,
I can see that.
I hate it, you know, right. because I'm like, go, 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 you know, 18-hour days, but, you know, it feels great and like just interacting with people, like sitting in the box tracking or doing, you know, stitching an HDR or panel, I'll do it, but it's not my favorite, you know, like I'd rather be freezing in Iceland on a, you know, frozen lake bed than sitting in a dark room.
Were you on Oblivion?
Yes, a little bit. And Fast and Furious.
All right.
The last one. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And so like, I mean, I'm more towards the adventure, you know, side. So sure. Like, I don't mind working the long hours and then just enjoying the location, you know,
right.
But I understand when people, you know, want to see their families and, you know, they want to know what time they're going to finish their, you know, and go home. It's like, that does not happen.
But but this is not, I mean, I know that a lot of people in the visual effects industry, for example, have complained about the fact that, you know, obviously subsidies are moving to different, you know, places of the world, whatever. And they're like, oh, I can't do this with my family. But just to give it in perspective, people that are on set, they do this all the time.
All the time, yeah. So
working on any movie, not visual effects actually is more stable than the rest of the visual effects industry, or the rest of the film industry, I would say, right?
Yeah, I think so.
In terms of location. So you may be asked to move to a different place for a subsidy, but it's not like...
probably for a longer time, you know?
Right.
Like a movie, the longest movie I've shot is... 6 months, right?
Okay.
And usually I'm on location for 4 months at a time.
Okay.
So like, and you know, most of the times, like, I don't know, some families can't move just for 4 months.
Right.
So you're apart from your family.
Right.
For that long.
Yeah, that's
And on a VFX, you know, like usually you'll get on a facility and like stay there for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit easier, or you move, you know, to Vancouver or somewhere and stay there for a little bit.
Right.
Yeah,
you're
film
4 to 6 months
at
a time,
like,
and it could be anywhere. It could be Iceland,
exactly,
or
a place
Alabama.
That, you know, a place that you can't even take your family. You know,
right?
Like we just shot in Cuba for 3 weeks, and like, there's no way you would move your family to Cuba,
Yeah, but don't they also try to help you a little bit? It's like, oh, okay, you get these weekends off, and they'll fly you back and forth a little bit, right? Sometimes or not really.
Not really.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't think a lot of people want to.
Because
it's so draining. You know what I mean? Like, all you want to do on the weekend, if you have a weekend, is rest and recuperate, you know? So it's, I mean, after working 17-hour days for 6 days a week.
Is that your normal day, 17 hours?
I mean, I would say 12 hours is a short day. 15 is normal.
Okay.
17 is long.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah. So, I mean, a usual work week on set for me is like 85 to 100 hours.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty impressive. And, okay, so would you say you're doing it for 4 months? Still a lot.
Yeah.
Still not a lot of time. Up to 6 months is the longest one you said. Is that like, would you say in a given year, you're on set 4 to 6 months out of the year?
Yes. I would say half a year I'm on set, yeah.
Half a year you're on set.
A good year, maybe 7 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the time you're back
at DD,
working on data wrangling or prepping for the next movie
Correct. Or like most of the times I get like 2 to 3 months of organizing the data that I just got.
Yep.
Onto the system, so and like guiding everybody else that's starting the movie where everything is, so that if I have to leave, they'll know everything.
Right.
You know.
And do you guys ever get called in during the very early process of bidding so that they know, like they say, hey, how are we going to shoot this? And you guys are part of the idea people?
Not us per se. It's mostly the supervisors.
So it's mostly the soups who do
that.
Yeah. So on top of you, you're not the only visual effects people on set, although you're always there. But the visual effects supervisor, him or herself, may be there.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Usually it's a VFX soup, like let's say for DD, it would be a VFX soup, me and maybe another person if there's budget. If not, we hire locals.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you'll get an assistant.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or a PA or something like that. Yeah.
And it's mostly like just, okay, take this hard drive, dump it here.
Yeah, or like somebody to take notes, camera notes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Did you ever want to shoot anything yourself? Any aspirations to make your own stuff?
Yes, but I don't know. It takes, like, knowing how much effort and money it takes.
Yeah.
It's... I am not as creative as I want to be. So like, I love helping people in their projects.
You love being part of the creative process.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not, I'm not, I don't aspire to be a director. Right. So like, I just, I like visual. Mm-hmm. So like, I love shooting for other people or, you know, like.
Do you work on side projects and help friends out and stuff like that?
Yeah. Yeah. I've done a couple. Yeah. It's fun.
It is fun. It is fun, especially when you don't have to, like, well, we don't have the money for that, so I'm not going to worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. But then sometimes it sucks because you don't have the money for that. Right, and you're like, oh, man.
Yeah. It's true. I remember we were doing, I did this short at DD, and we were going to do everything in a car. We had a bunch of car shots, right? We're visual effects people. And we know, like, the DP who we were working with, he was actually a DP that worked on actual features and stuff. Uh-huh. And so he said, wait a minute, weren't you guys going to put green screen behind the car? And he said, no. We don't have time for that. we're not gonna track this. It's like, so we just put white sheets back there and just blew out everything. Nice. So it just looked overblown. Yeah. And like, done. Yep, we don't have to track anything. Yeah. We don't have to put anything back there.
Yeah.
Because, like, we know how much work it is.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, people think that we're out to steal, you know, their jobs or like, it's like, right. No. Trust me. We want everything to be practical.
Right.
We just try and make it practical. We already have enough to do, you know?
Yeah. That's a very strange. It's interesting. Okay. Let's talk about that, because you most of your time when you're discussing something on set, you're trying to find a way not to do a visual effect.
Yes. Yes. And then, like, you know, sometimes either costumes or makeup or, right, you know, special effects.
Right.
They're like, oh, I don't know. It's like, well, if you try to, you know, make this costume better or, you know, not better, but like just they say, oh, it's not flowing like we want to or like, try to use a different fabric or, right, you know what I mean? Like, trust me, it'll look better than us making it CG.
Right.
You know what I mean? We already have to do so much stuff. Like, we don't need one more thing to do, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, if we can do it on set, it's way better.
Right. I remember I was doing some commercial that involved miniatures, right? And we had to put some CG stuff into a miniature. And they shot it with one of those little periscope little camera things so that it can get really close to the model. And they're trying to move it along, and the arm, you know, with this whatever camera rig they were using, and it was just really unstable. It just looked like,
wah. Yeah.
And they were like, you could stabilize that. I said, listen, I might as well just redo the whole thing in CG, which would change my bid.
Yeah.
So how much time can we afford to try this until it's right, not to do it? And because I said, I don't care. I was like, if you want me to do it in CG, we're just going to have to change our bid. Yeah. At which point the producer goes, whoa.
Yeah, exactly.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I don't want to pay more for this if I don't have to, because the DP wants to move along. I was like, I don't want to do this for 17 times.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Yep. That's, a lot of people don't understand, you know, right. And like, it's weird to try to explain what we do on the box and at the back at the facility, mm-hmm, to the people on set. And it's really hard to get the people at the facilities to understand how hectic it was on set, that they're like, you know, because sometimes people back, you know, here, they complain, it's like, oh, why didn't you just put a tracking marker there? Or why didn't you just fix their hair?
Right.
And it's like, oh, trust me, it doesn't work that way. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, why don't you just get a picture?
10 seconds.
Yeah. Why didn't you just take a picture of the actor? And it's like, no, you have to go through their assistant, their agent, you know what I mean? The AD, you have to ask 10 people to take a picture of somebody before you actually just take a picture, you know? Right. And it's like, it's not that easy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. You're right. Because a lot of times we always think of the fact that, oh, the people on set just don't understand. But sometimes the people back, you know, on the box don't just understand what it's like to be on set.
Yeah.
Do you think it'd be beneficial for people that work in visual effects to be on set more?
I absolutely think so. And also, like, because a lot of right now, a lot of data wranglers out on set, mm-hmm, have never worked on the box either. Yet they're gathering data.
And they don't know what happens to that data.
And they don't know what happens to the data set. So they don't really know what they're capturing it for. You know, you just tell them, hey, can you just get an HDR here? But they don't really understand how we're using that HDR or why, you know? So like, I feel like, you know, by tracking, mm-hmm, on Benjamin Button and then going out on Tron for set work, it, you know, completely changed the way that I do things. Because right. now that I know how to track, let's say I know that I don't need this extra marker here, or I do need this extra marker here.
Because you've done it.
Because I've done it, exactly. Right. And I think that both parties will benefit at least knowing what the things are used for. Right. You know, that we're not just asking for the lights to be on just because I want the lights to be on, yep. or, you know, or why I can't put a marker there on the spot, you know? Right. So it totally would benefit.
It's so funny because I remember where I had made these special trackers, right? That I uh-huh. thought were going to be really good to track, uh-huh. right? And they're like, oh, these are great. But I was like, I don't want them... You know, I don't want to have to paint them all out. So I made them kind of small, and then I put in a shot, and it's like they were like a pixel.
Yeah.
And it's like, how am I going to track that? I realized, like, you know, I'm an idiot. Like, I didn't realize that after all my efforts, like, I want to make them small so they're not too much to paint out, but then, like, I can't even see that
yeah.
tracker.
Yeah.
I have to make a big – so you really have to do it and think about it. And actually, I think that the idea of making an interesting tracker is good. It's just that you have to think. Like what you're gonna
yeah. say. And, yeah, and oh, and speaking of trackers, nowadays all the fabric for the blue screens mm-hmm. have changed to like this fireproof fabric that is not Velcroable. You can't stick gaffer's tape on it because it'll fall. Like, so it's so hard.
Why did they do that? Because I mean, ultimately you have to put trackers on it anyway.
Fireproof.
Yeah, but
and
okay.
I think it's cheaper than the ones we used to use before.
Really?
Yeah. And so now
so what do
they're
you do?
Using, well.
You put poles with balls on it and stuff?
No, either that or like magnets on both sides, which is a pain in the ass because, you know, you have to have two people do it. Or on the last movie I worked on, we, you know, those tag holders for clothes?
Right.
Those, you know, so we like tagged. The things
oh, you mean
through...
like the stuff that so you don't steal this clothes kind of thing?
No. The actual like little plastic things that hold the price tags.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. So literally like drill holes on the tracking markers and then put those tags through it, through the fabric. So they're hanging, you know, on the fabric. Like stuff like that that you didn't even have to worry about before because you can just Velcro something on.
Yeah.
Now you have to have an extra day just to put markers on this humongous blue screen or green screen. Yeah.
That's horrible. And you can't move it easily either.
You can't move it. So once it's on. Or you just take it off and you can't put it again unless you have another 30 minutes.
Yeah, that's horrible.
Yeah. And then you're like, okay, is this too big of a marker? Is this too small of a marker? And you know what I mean? Because a close up like this,
yeah.
the marker is going to be super blurry. So you need something a
and
little bigger.
You had
bigger.
A bunch of markers there, and then somebody did do a close up, and you don't even, there's no you marker.
Yeah,
in your
exactly.
Shot.
Yep. Ugh. Little things like that that, you know, people don't understand because all they see is one shot, you know?
Why do
like,
you put a marker there?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. And that's really good. Yeah, because I've been that guy.
Yep.
I've been that guy who's like, why don't I put a marker there? Because that's what I can figure out. I usually like markers because I'm from the lighting guy. I like markers in the background to sort of guesstimate the focus.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it's also a good way to do check out focus and stuff. That's interesting. So let's see. Besides surveys and HDRs and markers and stuff like that, obviously how do you – what is your process for doing – That sort of helps people in the actual shot. But you also do a lot of help for people that are prepping assets, right?
Yeah.
So that's mostly just reference photos of people you know, textures and stuff like that, or?
Yeah, it depends on how deep you want to go or how important that character is, right?
Yep.
So like, let's say the Beast, on Beauty and the Beast, mm-hmm. huge character, right? Every single costume I shot on a maquette that looks like the Beast, you know, turntable style, like three exposures, like super detailed, like close-up macros,
yep.
Light shining through to see the iridescence, backlight to see how much shedding or how, you know, mm-hmm. detailed the fabric is. And then we got one of the stunt guys to wear every single costume again,
uh-huh.
and then move videos to see how the fabric flows. And then on top of that, then we had like the Beast, I guess, maquette's fake head
mm-hmm.
that they put on the stunt guy and then, you know, shoot that. It's a lot of photography.
Yeah.
It's a lot of photography. And that's just one character.
Okay.
And then we do that for sets. We do that for, you know, all the other characters, props. We do a lot of prop photography. Mm-hmm. And then scanning, you know. Then most of the times we either do photogrammetry. Because that's a big thing now.
So do you guys do the photogrammetry yourselves, or do you hire people, or do you take all your assets and say, here you go, make an asset out
of it?
Both. Okay.
Both, yeah. Sometimes if there's like a huge amount of characters or whatever, we do, you know, they hire a LiDAR company or a photo scanning company to do those assets. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes when there's, it's just one or two characters, we do it ourselves.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So how do you guys do it?
Stay still and just go around and shoot photos around it.
I think it's amazing that photogrammetry now has become so good.
It's so good.
And you can get so much detail out of things just with photographs.
Yeah. It's crazy.
The technology is incredible. It used to be so hard to get detailed stuff now. And
it would take so long to process. And now everything's getting a little bit faster. You know, it's still not as good.
What's the software that everyone uses now for doing the photogrammetry? What's it called?
Reality Capture.
Yeah. Okay.
And we used to use Agisoft, but I think Reality Capture has surpassed it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll look into that. Yeah. I love the fact that people can just, you know, the concept of photogrammetry and how it works is so cool because you can get so much detail out of things with just photos.
Photos, yeah, it's great. But I mean, it's still not as good as a LiDAR, you know, or an actual scan.
Okay.
But it's pretty good. I mean, for hero characters, people still scan or like have an actual photo booth, okay, you know?
Technically, if you go to the light stage at ICT.
Exactly.
That's photogrammetry, though.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But it's like, it's a
very,
a rig,
very,
you know,
special,
like,
contained photogrammetry.
I'm talking about like one person photogrammetry where you go around the person and just, you know, instead of just one snap and 200 cameras, you know.
Yep.
That's, I mean, three different things, you know. I guess it's LiDAR, then the whole rig, photogrammetry rig, and then the one person, you know, down and dirty, just shoot photos.
Yeah, you know, there's a guy I know who does a lot of digital human work, and he does a lot of it for personal, just for fun. He will, to do his reference, sometimes he'll just go on his like iPhone and just take a couple of pictures and use some random photogrammetry app on his phone.
Wow.
It says, it's like, it gets me like 75% there.
Wow.
And it's just
that's
amazing.
Impressive. Yeah.
You know, just the fact that that's possible now is really cool that people have that kind of technology. What is your favorite part of it? Which part of it do you like the most?
Traveling.
The traveling?
Yes. I love traveling.
Okay. So where have you been?
London, Iceland, Korea, Budapest, Cuba, Brazil, Chile, Canada, the US.
Yeah.
Have I been to China? No, I haven't shot in China yet.
Okay.
Thailand.
Wow.
I'm looking at your map right now. I don't remember.
Yeah, you've covered most of it.
Yeah. I would love to go to Africa.
Have you been to Australia?
I have not been to Australia.
New Zealand?
Nope.
No. Nope.
Uh-huh. Yeah. If anybody's listening, I would like to go to those places. Africa too. I would love to go to Africa.
Yeah.
I haven't been there. Yeah.
Yeah. I know Chris Blythe is over there.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So quite a few places. Yeah. A mixture of commercials and
so this
features.
Is your passion.
I love it.
If you, it's like, yep. I love being on set. I love being working with movies and traveling.
Yes.
Then you're set.
Yes.
That's awesome.
I love. Yeah. I mean, we get paid to like take pictures all over the world.
I mean, it can't be for everyone. But
yes,
if you're set for it, because it is a huge amount of work. It's very stressful.
Yes.
And
you're never home.
And you're never
home.
So
like, it's not, I don't think
you can't
it's
have
family.
A dog.
Yeah.
Do you have a dog?
No.
Okay.
It's not family friendly. It's not pet friendly.
Yeah.
And you know, if you don't like to sweat and, you know, work hard and go run around, then it's definitely not for you. You know what I mean? Like I totally understand there's people that just want to go to an office, sit in front of a computer and go home at a certain hour. And that's perfect. Cause we need those people.
Right.
But like, I like waking up at 4 a.m, not knowing where we're shooting, and then like going home to the sun, you know, until the sun comes up the next morning.
Right.
And just like sweating, running around, you know, I love it.
Yeah. Well, that's really awesome. That's really cool. What was your favorite crew to be with? On what show was it?
I don't know. I really enjoyed Benjamin Button.
It's all right. All right. You got it. You really enjoyed Benjamin Button?
But that
Benjamin
was your first.
Was that because of the eye opening experience?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, it was like Fincher. It was like cool. Like, you know, we're making somebody old. You know, it was Brad Pitt. Everything. It was my first feature. Like, it was just everything.
Yeah.
And it was in New Orleans. So that was cool.
Oh, right. You were in New Orleans.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was like my first actual, like, good paying job too, like, you know, since I graduated. So like it was all like yeah.
How old were you at the time?
I mean, maybe 20.
Wow.
No, never mind. No, I was like maybe 22.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, because you graduated from
because it was after college. So okay. Yeah,
like right after college.
Yeah.
All right. Were you? Did you come to LA and then they move you out there, or do you just sort of happen to be in New Orleans? Because Scad's not. I mean, I guess that's not that far from.
No, I actually, I after college, I came straight to LA without a job, and I just like knocked the doors of like commercial production houses, mm-hmm. and I got a job as a PA, okay. And that's how I actually started. You know, feature Benjamin Button was my first feature, but I had done commercials before as a PA,
right?
And then I, because my visa was running out, I had to look for an actual stable job, mm-hmm. and not freelancing. And that's when I started the camera house job.
Right.
And then that took me to New Orleans.
Who was the DP on it? Was it Claudio?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's on all his films, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Since that one, I think.
Yeah. Cause I guess, I mean, I work with Eric Barber quite a bit, and he does a lot of Fincher stuff, and he does a lot of Joe Kaczynski stuff, and they both lose Claudio. Yep. So it's like, it's always Claudio. So.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. What do you think of Claudio? What do you think of him as a DP?
Good. I mean, he's very, I know he came from a gaffer side, you know, so and he's awesome to work with. I love him.
He really knows his stuff. He's very technical.
He's very technical. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's very, very technical.
But he also seems like pretty reasonable. I mean, as a person, like he doesn't.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He's like, yeah, we can do that. We can't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like he works with visual effects.
Yeah, he understands
it. So he understands it. Yep. Yeah, exactly. And so
does Fincher, right? Fincher came from visual effects.
Yes.
So
yeah.
So he understands it. And so does Joe. Like Joe, when I was to joke about it with Joe, he was like, he's the only director I ever worked on who's asking me what my noise threshold was in V-Ray on my set, on my shot. Because he knows it, you know? They used to work in that area.
Yeah.
So it's actually, that is an interesting point that, you know, you mentioned that like the crews nowadays have a better understanding of visual effects. It wasn't like, because I remember when I first started in visual effects ages and ages ago, when I met this friend of a friend of mine, and he was a grip or a dolly grip, a key dolly grip, and his other friend was a gaffer. It's like, oh, it's my friend Chris Nichols. He goes, oh yeah, what do you do? He says, you know, I work in visual effects. And I was like, oh, you're the guys who show up with the Christmas ornaments. They're like, that's all we know as, like, the guys with the silver balls and who knows what they're doing, right?
Yeah.
But now they're like, no, we got to do this. This has got to be tracked. And then you've got motion control cameras now.
Yeah. And they actually ask us what color of green screen we want, what color of blue screen, you know, like what type. And
so are you one of the people that has to make those choices? Do you call out green or blue or whatever?
Supervisors usually.
Supervisors usually do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And they'll know, you know, I mean.
Based on comping.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. And based on costumes and environments.
Yep.
Yep.
I had that happen to me once where we were shooting and we had a background shot, a bunch of people in there. This is another commercial. And I said, all right, well, you put a blue screen up here and we'll have everyone walk in front. And then they put everyone walking in front. Everyone was wearing blue jeans.
Oh.
It's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're like, your coordinator, the wardrobe department needs to coordinate with the camera department.
Yeah, yeah. That's a
very common. Though.
Very common. Yeah. Or I remember we shot a Nike commercial and it was like, okay, should we use blue screen or green screen? But the uniforms were blue and the grass was green, so it was just
to make it a toss up.
It was like
just
either way, just go. I mean, whatever you have in hand, because it will suck either way.
Right.
But it's funny because like that works with for us or not for us when the director is very VFX savvy.
Right.
Because like if they're not VFX savvy, they'll be like, oh, you know what you're doing. We'll trust you. And so like you can actually direct more towards what you need.
You can argue towards what you need.
Exactly. Right? Like if you're working for a person like Fincher, he knows what you can do.
He's like, or nah, you can get away. You don't need
exactly,
that.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So it's like,
Yeah. Yeah. Well, or sometimes you know the problem is having a director that knows just enough to get himself in trouble.
Yes.
Or herself in trouble.
Yeah.
Like, not exactly how it works anymore. But maybe 20 years ago we should have done that. Yeah. Well, that's cool. That's cool. So and so how you're obviously you're still at TD.
Yep.
What was the last big projects you worked on that you can talk about? Obviously some of the stuff you've probably worked on recently we can't talk about till it's out.
Yeah.
Right?
Fast.
Fast and Furious
is one of the Fast and Beast.
And Beast.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
How long were you on Beast?
That was a 5-ish month job
in London.
In London, yeah.
Oh,
that we shot all of it in London.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then Fast, how long was that?
Fast was like 6 months.
Oh, really?
Just because it was a lot of travel. It was like Iceland for 6 weeks, Cuba for 3 weeks, Atlanta for like 4 months.
Mm.
Yeah.
That
was a long one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they, you know, Fast movies travel everywhere. So
yeah, well,
they're really fun to work on.
Really?
Oh my God. Yeah. They're, I think the funnest, like not as, you know, filmmaking important, you know.
Doesn't
but,
have to be.
Yeah. But they're so much fun because all we do is wreck cars.
Right.
That's all you do.
Yeah. Well,
it's amazing.
And you get, and what's also cool.
Especially Second Unit. Second Unit is the funnest.
Well, Second Unit, of course, because that's where people don't realize like. They think that First Unit is where all the cool stuff is. That's where all the close-up dialogues.
Yeah, exactly.
Second Unit is like, let's blow this shit up.
Yep, exactly.
Let's flip this car and see a big fireball behind it.
Yes. Yeah. It's awesome. Yeah. It was like, ship 53 cars to somewhere and come back with two.
Right.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And so what's also cool about Fast is that there was a lot of practical, obviously, right?
Yes, yeah.
And then, I had a talk with Jay Barden about it earlier, and he was saying, it's, we mix the CG and the practical, which actually is so cool because you kind of, you can't tell what's CG and what's practical.
Yeah, yeah.
And when CG is so good that you can't tell which is CG and what's practical, then that's really
perfect,
good CG.
Yeah.
but you got to witness a lot of probably pretty awesome practical stuff on there.
I mean, we were shooting in this iced, lake bed and we were exploding like at least 100 gallons of just explosives on this ice. And you're just like, at one point you're like, we're standing on frozen water having gallons explode. You're like, I don't know if this is the safest, but it's fun.
Did you ever feel unsafe?
I mean.
A little terrified?
Some parts, you know what they're doing. They know what they're doing, but like, you're still, things go wrong.
Who was the practical
JD? I forgot his last name.
Okay.
But he was the main special effects guy on Second Unit.
Who's the guy who always is insane? He's always at the Academy, and whenever they do the Oscars and I go to the Bake Offs, he's up there like three times.
Oh, really?
It's John Ford or something, I think his name is.
I don't know.
He invented like the car flipper.
Oh, wow.
So like he did all this kind of stuff and he's insane. I remember.
All those special effects guys are insane. I'm like, all they do is explode and do crazy stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. It really, really cool. I was on Stealth ages ago, and they did a shot where I guess Eddie, the character, is coming out of a warehouse and fires missiles at the door, and the door explodes, right? And then all these... like jeeps and trucks and stuff like that, and people just get blown back from the explosion, right? And they shot it practically.
Wow.
And the entire frame was just a big fireball with these silhouettes of like cars and people flying backwards. And there was, I didn't even see the wires because it was so overblown by the explosion. And I was looking at the plate and I was like, what? And it said underneath, like, not a visual effects shot. And they put it down there for bidding. Like, you don't need to bid on this shot.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's insane. Like,
that's
just
crazy.
To see that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's got to be really cool to witness that happening on set.
Yeah. And all the planning it takes,
you
know, it's crazy.
Have you seen any miniature stuff at all? Or they don't do as many miniatures.
No,
as
I actually I've never. Yeah, I've never shot anything on miniature.
Yeah, it's interesting. Miniatures are the lost art form at this point. But you know, at the same time, I do appreciate good miniatures, and I think they're really cool. But I think that what's done these days in set extensions in CG is
pretty good.
It's not just pretty good, it's really good. Yeah. And people would say, oh, they just do it on a computer these days. It's just as much work as miniatures, but looks better.
Yeah.
And so I don't think, not to necessarily knock miniatures, because I think miniatures has a look to it that's very unique, but it's not always appropriate for sometimes.
Totally.
Yeah. Well, that has been amazing. We've actually just coming pretty close to an hour here, which is awesome. Yeah. How did that feel?
Good.
See?
Yeah.
Told you it wasn't going to be so bad.
Not when you're asking the questions. It's good.
Yeah. So what, can you tell us what you're working on next?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, then we won't
ask. I don't
know.
It's literally, I don't know. Usually DD gets a project and then they're like, hey, you're working on this. And
so okay.
I'm like, okay. So I'll probably know two weeks before I go somewhere.
They're like,
hey, pack for 4 months. You're leaving.
Nice.
It's like, okay, cool.
Okay. Awesome.
But hopefully something fun.
Yeah. No, it's great. I love stories on set. There's been so many on set stories are always the most fun stories.
Oh, yeah.
What's your favorite on set story? Come on, you got to have a good one.
I have a few good ones, but I can't say them.
Well, yeah. You can say one of them. I'll tell you one as an example that I love.
Okay.
And this is from Jesse. Right?
Okay.
So it was Jesse was on Oblivion, and Morgan Freeman was there, right? And Morgan Freeman's double. His double was there, and or stand-in. Sorry, stand-in. And he asked, Eric Barba asked him, it's like, hey, I need a reference shot of Morgan Freeman and his double put together, right? So that we can match clothes. There was some reason. And Jess is all right. So he said, hey, can you guys set that together and stuff? And his double was basically like smiling because he was happy he was having a picture with Morgan Freeman and stuff. And Tom Cruise walks by, has no idea what's going on. And he says, oh, are we taking pictures? And he like goes in between him and puts his arms around them. And is like, and Jesse's like, yeah. And so he continues to take pictures. So if you look through the stash of references, because there's always a tons of references, all of a sudden there's this picture of Tom Cruise like holding on to these guys with this big smile, like during a class photo on vacation or something.
That's awesome.
Oh, that one cracked me up.
Yeah.
That one
cracked me up. That's awesome. I know. Okay. There's first day on Ender's Game.
Oh, nice.
Very first day.
Oh, it's got to be a Harrison Ford story.
Yes. And I'm like,
oh, I can't wait.
Literally, we're setting up and like we're shooting on this house. And I don't think I even realized that Harrison was going to be on the shoot.
Right.
And so, or on that day. And so I'm like at Crafty and like just eating like something. And then all of a sudden, there's like this guy like next to me just like eating guac. It's like, oh, that's really good guacamole. You know? And I was like, oh my God, it's Harrison Ford. And I just go on my walk. It's like, Harrison Ford is eating guacamole right next to me. And I was like, this is so cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I love that stuff. It's really cool.
Yeah. It's like, man, I just ate guac with Harrison Ford.
Yeah, but then when you're on set, you know, you're just part of the job, right?
Yeah. And I mean, I don't get starstruck. I mean, it's like, whatever, it's just another job.
Right.
But then there's some people that you're just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's them. You know, like, it's just like.
Harrison
so
Ford would
weird.
Do that to anyone.
Yeah. Harrison Ford was one.
Who was the
and
other
like,
one?
Stanley Tucci for some reason.
Really?
I love him. And I was like, that's Stanley. Like, it was so weird.
Yeah.
I was like, why am I starstruck with him? Like, so weird.
Yeah. It was funny because when I was on Oblivion, we were doing, a facial scan of Tom Cruise, right? And I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to be Tom Cruise, whatever. You know, we're going to do that. And suddenly he showed up and he just was so charismatic that I did not expect to be. Like, it wasn't until he was there that it wasn't like, oh, I can't wait to meet Tom Cruise. It was like, hey, how's it going? And he was just really charismatic and he was talking and engaged you and made eye contact constantly. And I was like, what a nice guy.
It's so nice,
I was like, he was really, really nice. I like him.
It's so weird. Yeah, like, I mean, it's because some of the, you know, they're it's mostly the people that are surrounding them that just, like, isolate them and, like, try to, like, you know, oh, no, you can't do that. You can't talk to him or whatever. Yeah. But then, like, if you really actually just talk to them, like, it's awesome. Like, Brad Pitt, you know, I was, like, working with him and everything. Yeah. Like, he literally, he came to DD to do like a facial capture or whatever, like 4 months afterwards. And he literally remembered my name.
That's
after 4 months. And you're just like, I was a nobody. You know what I mean? Like, how you probably already shot 3 movies. How do you even remember my name?
It's crazy. Don't you think that's just an amazing special talent? And
it's very appreciated. You know, it's awesome.
Like, Ron Howard is the same way. He's incredibly sweet. Incredibly sweet. You know who was surprising, who remembered everyone's name? Oh, what's the guy's name? He was the director on Stealth. Rob Cohen. Uh-huh. Yes, Rob Cohen. Thank you. He remembered individual roto artists' names.
Wow.
He would say, oh, yeah, thanks. You know, it's like, he remembered everyone's names, where they were from. Something he remembers, like, isn't this your birthday today? Like, how do you know?
That's crazy.
That guy's birthday is today.
Yeah, no, that's crazy.
And so I think that that's a talent that when you go on set, you just feel appreciated a little bit more for that. And it just makes you feel, as opposed to someone goes, hey, you.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, definitely. But I also don't fault people for not knowing, because it's like there's 400 people here.
Right.
I don't remember, like, as soon as the movie ends, like, if I work on with the same person on the next movie, I was like, I know you. I know your face. Did we work on something together? And I feel so bad because, like, most of the times they know my name and I'm terrible with names. I'll recognize you. And I was just like, I am so sorry, but I have no idea where we worked before and, like, what's your name? Like, it feels horrible.
Yeah, I've been there. I do that. So I... Yeah, especially when I go to, like, conferences and stuff. It's like, hey, Chris, how are you? It's like, hey, buddy, what's going on?
Yeah, it's so uncomfortable.
I feel bad. I feel bad, though, because I recognize who they are. I'm like, oh, that's right. That's the person.
Yeah.
And then you're scrambling through your head. But yeah, I think it's cool because you do – when you are on set and you're doing these close things, you're, like, working in, like a commando unit that's really fast and you get to know each other really well and everything.
It's like summer camp.
Yeah.
It's like you have a summer fling with like 300 people and then you move on. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But you're so close with those people for, you know, because you're working 100 hours a week with the same people.
Yeah.
And you form a family. But then, like, as soon as the job is done, you're like, okay, on to the next, you know, the next group. It's weird. But and it's hard to, like, keep friendships, even though, like, you were super close.
Do you keep friendships a lot, or is it hard?
It's hard, but I try. You know what I mean? Especially because it's like you travel so much that most of the friends that you make are like either in different locations.
Right.
And so it's even harder, you know?
But it is kind of like summer camp where you're like, well, I mean, you probably won't see this person again.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, it's very rare that I see somebody again. You know, mm-hmm. I was working on Black Panther.
Mm-hmm.
And
awesome.
I just worked with the same gaffer that was on Ender's Game.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh my God, like, it's been years, you know, like, it's crazy. It's been like 5 years. And then I actually worked with a costumer on Black Panther that I had worked with on Benjamin Button the last time.
Wow.
And I was like, we kept looking at each other and we knew that we knew each other. And we was like, I don't know. And then I just went for it. And I was like, where do I know you from? Mm-hmm. And then she was like, well, I used to live in New Orleans. It's like, Benjamin Button. She's like, yes. And then we everything just came back. It's like, I know exactly who you are now. It was it's crazy. Yeah. It's like 10 years ago.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, cool. All right. Well, I want to wrap it up so I don't take too much of your time, but it was really awesome talking to you. And I think it's, you know, for my audience, they want to hear these kind of stories and understand it and learn from it too. So I think it's an important skill that people learn that stuff. So
yeah, awesome.
What would you recommend people do? Is there any literature that people can read about this stuff? What's your best place to
Learn about onset? I mean, I think photography is a
photography.
Photography is a good thing because I mean, most of the stuff that we get are photography based.
Right.
You know, HDRs, textures, lighting references.
Mm-hmm.
It's all photography based. So right. like if you know how to take a good photo,
right,
and then you learn what you need, then you can like use those skills.
Everything is a reference of a photograph.
Yes. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
My favorite cinematography book, it's a very common one, so it's you'll probably go, yeah, I know that one. It's The Five C's of Cinematography.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a really good book.
Yeah.
And it basically just, it's the basics of cinematography, but it'll tell you everything you need to know in terms of how to compose a shot and how to do everything. Yeah. So, well, that's cool. Yeah. So pick up a camera. That's what I always say. Whenever people want to learn about rendering, they just pick up a camera because that's basically rendering is a camera.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And just put it in manual. Don't put it in automatic. Right. That's another thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And use primes.
Yes.
Start with primes because that'll teach you composition.
Yes.
Physically.
Yeah. That's true. And framing. Yeah.
And framing. Yep. 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 Absolutely. Well, cool. Thanks so much, Vicky. I appreciate
it. Thank you.
We'll do our little Polaroid, but I really appreciate you coming by. This is awesome. I haven't seen you in years.
Thank you. I know. It's been great. Crazy.
Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot.